They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners. We're once again back with you on time this time, as opposed to previous weeks where we've been kind of missing by a little bit. But we're using new software. We're testing things. So if there's any issues, let us know. Send us an email. Otherwise, yeah, Elliot, you said you had something you wanted to banter about. So what are you trying to banter about?
I just wanted to shout out that reviews are in for Robert Eggers Nosferatu. They are very strong. I'm getting a little excited here. I was already planning on seeing this movie, but all the reviews, yeah, they're pretty rave. And I'm big into gothic horror. I like the source material, so I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's do it to it. Nathan, are you interested in this movie at all? Does the fact that it's apparently well liked, does that move the needle for you?
Not really, because I feel like Robert Eggers has kind of established the type of movie that he's going to make, and fans of his are kind of down for that if they're down for it. I did not really enjoy The Lighthouse, which is the only Robert Eggers movie I've seen, so I'm not tremendously excited. I also think Nosferatu and just Dracula stories in general, I've watched like four of them in the last year, and I just kind of struggle to see how anything he's going to do is going to be that novel or exciting. So I'm not super excited. It's not something I'm going to see in theaters. It's something I might catch later down the line if I am feeling a little froggy and want to watch Nicholas Holt get terrorized by Bill Skarsgård.
Well, your loss.
We missed in our week that we missed talking about the announcement that Conan O'Brien is going to be the host of this year's Oscar ceremony. A lot of people very excited about this. Conan is very well liked in almost every space I've ever seen him discussed in. I'm pretty excited about this. I think he's going to be, at the very least, not going to harass Nobel Peace Prize winners in the audience. I feel pretty confident that Conan's not going to do anything like that. But I think he's going to be funny. I think he always puts a huge amount of effort into everything he does. So I think that it's going to be enjoyable. I always enjoy the Oscars, and I don't think the addition of Conan is going to change most people's fundamental issue with the Oscars, which is that it lasts for like 3 hours and it's longer than most of the movies, although not this year, because The Brutalist is like 3.5 hours long and that movie's gonna get nominated. So Elliot, are you what does the addition of Conan do for your excitement?
Nothing. I never enjoy the Oscars, and I don't expect that will change this time. I'm talking about the bits here. Yeah. I think the ceremony's fine, and I enjoy some of the speeches. I have no problem with this. I do not watch any of Conan's stuff. I didn't watch him on late night. I don't follow him now, but every time I've seen him in like little clips and stuff, he's always come across as very funny. Obviously, he was a writer on The Simpsons for a bit. That's a really strong item on your comedy resume. So yeah, I if I had to choose between Jimmy Kimmel and Conan, I would pick Conan. Sorry, Jim.
That's pretty fair, I would say. Otherwise, not a lot of stuff to be, well, there's some stuff to be excited for. Obviously, Elliot's excited for the Nosferatu movie. I think The Brutalist is coming out pretty soon. I'm kind of excited for that. And
The Return? That looks pretty cool.
Honestly, The Return does look really good. Also, Juror Number 2 is finally going to be widely available here pretty soon. So everyone go out, support that to continue hammering home what an idiotic decision it was to not give that film a wide release. Yeah, The Return. The reviews I read of The Return, I was like, dang. Even I read a negative review of it, and even that made me want to see the movie. That, like, it just seemed like the guy wasn't having fun, because it sounded like a really great idea to me.
The negative reviews are all, this movie's too good. It's too yeah. enjoyable.
Yeah, and I'm like, hey, dude, that's what I'm looking for. So anyway, yeah, should be a pretty good December if you're looking to get out of the cold and get into a movie theater. Elliot, speaking of movie theaters, this is a great... We're actually reviewing a movie today for this episode. What are the odds?
Whoa, seriously? That's wild.
Elliot, you picked this movie. This is a movie that you have a bit more of a history with than I do. Well, maybe not that much. You've thought about it more than I have. So, Elliot, why don't you give our listening audience a rundown of this movie? What's it about? What's the deal? Why should they care? And let's get this thing started.
The deal. What's the deal with Tar? What's eating Tar? What's up with Tar? These are the questions that the audience is asking.
Yeah.
So Tar is a 20... Oh, shoot. I thought maybe I could remember. 2022 movie directed by Todd Field.
Good job.
that, if you'll... take a brief stroll down memory lane with me, you'll remember was one of my favorite movies of 2022 when we did our year in review. So we've got two in a row episodes we're doing on movies that I really liked from 2022. But if you missed it, which you may have, it wasn't huge. It was very well liked by critics and it had some Oscar attention, but in terms of box office returns, it wasn't anything special. It's a movie about a conductor, a woman conductor named Tar, who is a very successful, well-regarded member of the cultural elite. And it sort of follows dual storylines of her trying to conduct a live recording of Mahler's Fifth Symphony, at the same time as revelations about her personal life and her misdeeds come to light and begin to eat away at her psyche and her public image. So it's described as a psychological drama. I think that's a pretty good way of looking at it. It is very psychological, sometimes a little bit surreal, sometimes a little bit surreal. But yeah, this is the movie that Nathan and I saw in theaters. I can't even remember why, because I know that Banshees was on our radar, sort of, but who decided that we should see Tar?
I want to say it was me, that it was just a movie that I had seen enough people discussing that I decided we should add it on. I want to say we saw it the day after we saw Banshees, that we saw Banshees on Saturday, and then the very next day we went to... Tar on Sunday.
I do remember it, them being in pretty close proximity. But anyway, so there. Just to give you my... So that's our experience with the movie is right there. We saw it when it came out. This is actually the first time that I'm rewatching it since then, just like with Banshees. And I'm going to be honest, I was not worried about not liking Banshees, because I had already seen that again, and I was pretty confident in my memories that I was always certain that Banshees was going to come out of that review looking pretty good. I was not as confident about this one, because it had been, 2 years since I've seen it last. There's just no accounting for the impact of mood and the kind of day you're having on your reception to a movie. So all this is to say that I was in no way confident that I would like Tar as much as I did when I first saw it. But I'm going to say I did like Tar as much as the first time I saw it here. I really, really enjoyed it. I think this movie's fantastic. I think Cate Blanchett, dang, she's good in this movie. She was robbed for Best Actress, if you ask me. No disrespect to you, Michelle Yeoh. You're a great actress as well, but I'm going to let you finish. But Cate Blanchett had the best performance of the year.
Wow.
Or of all time, whatever it is. I can't remember. This movie is a real Shakespearean tragedy of narcissism and power and just all kinds of stuff. There's a lot going on in this movie. It looks fantastic. Incredible score here. I think I talked about this on the podcast before when we were mentioning Tar, that the sound design on this movie is phenomenal. Like the music that they're playing, not like the score, but the music in the movie, the diegetic music, is so lush and full, and it just hits you in the face. Even watching on my puny little TV with its puny little speakers, I thought it was great. I'm going to get into some hardcore overanalyzing of different things in this movie and what they mean, both about the themes and about Tar's character development and her journey. But just high level thoughts, this movie is really good, gripping from start to finish. I get so much satisfaction out of thinking about this movie, out of analyzing it. It's a lot like Oppenheimer in that way, that it's a movie that I don't want to leave in the theater or on streaming or whatever. It's a movie that I want to take home with me and just spend some time thinking about it. So that's where I'm at. Nathan, where are you at?
Yeah, this is our new system. We can no longer see each other, so we are also unable to... In the past, you've been able to figure out how I felt about your thoughts by looking at my face, and now you can't. I think I liked this probably about the same as I did when I first saw it, maybe a little less. I think, and I thought this when the movie released too, that it is clearly a work of art. It's an artistic feat. There's clearly a huge amount of effort being expended at every point in this movie, from the actors to the director to the cinematographer to the sound design, is all very clearly trying to bring a very singular artistic statement and a very singular idea to the forefront. And I think, you know, not every movie that you watch is going to have that sort of vision behind it, and it's always fun to watch a movie that has that sort of vision. I think where the movie kind of loses me is I cannot for the life of me grasp what some of these scenes mean for that singular vision. That I wrote in my notes that I think this movie is both very difficult to watch, because I find it fascinating that you called it gripping. I would say this is one of the more boring movies, just in terms of, like, what is happening on screen. Not that nothing's happening, but the movie seems to be evading, like, any moments that you would consider normal to a drama film. That there's no, like, giant screaming matches between characters, or there's very few even sort of, like, arguments between characters. And you know, this is not a negative. I'm just explaining why this is a very difficult movie to watch, because I think it's purposely making it difficult to both follow the story as well as follow any sort of thread of a character arc. I am fascinated to listen to you make up some nonsense for Todd Field here. But I think it's a very difficult movie to watch because it's intentionally done so, which I think is interesting. I just don't think it at points it feels like it makes it more difficult than it needs to be. That there are some movies that I really like that are very difficult to watch and difficult to think about. But I think part of their skill lies in making that difficulty still accessible. And Tar is a movie that I think sometimes goes a little too overboard and is just really difficult with no... Which I don't know, you know. Maybe we're going to get into playground insults and you're just going to say, I'm a little namby-pamby baby who can't think about movies and really engage with films. But I think... That's where my negatives are going to come from, and I already know that I'm going to seem a little negative on this movie, so I do want to say I agree with a lot of the stuff you say. I think it's a very, very good movie, and I think it's very, very, you know, well made. I just think this is going to be an interesting discussion about what on earth happened when she saw that wolf.
Well, it may come as a surprise to you, Nathan, but I don't 100% disagree with you, although I think that my reasoning is probably going to be a bit different, and it will probably impact my ultimate rating in a different way. But I'm not going to get into that right now. For now, I want to start with what I think is the best scene in the movie for a lot of reasons. Both formally and thematically, and I'm assuming, not because I'm making a joke of like, oh, Nathan has to like all the things I like, just because of what I know about you as a consumer of movies, that this is probably a scene that you like as well. And I'm talking about the scene in Juilliard when Tar is kind of having an argument with one of her students about composers, yes, and conductors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great scene, Elliot. You're okay. Very correct in saying that's a very, very good scene.
So I'm going to start here with the formal elements of why this scene is so fantastic. I mean, obviously, right from the bat, this scene lasts for like 10 minutes, and that is not an exaggeration. I think it does last for 10 minutes. Camera never cuts. That's great. And it's not the most intricate one or ever put to film, but it's also not just a shot of people talking at a table. Like, Tar is moving around the room, and the camera is also moving a lot as well. Like, it's kind of in the bleachers, and then sometimes it's up close right next to her, shifting the focus. It just all, it's so smooth, the camera. In this entire movie, but especially in this scene, the way that it kind of like just dances around Tar and around the scene. So that's great. And also, this scene is, I think, really important to the movie and to its themes, partly because of what will happen later on. That later on, we learn that this scene is filmed. And the filmer, whoever it may be, sort of cuts it up to make it look like Tar is being like outright racist and abusive to her student. But it's really interesting because that kind of misses the much more subtle but much more destructive nature of the abuse that is happening between Tar and the student. That she's not being racist, but she is being a complete jerk. Like, she is making an example out of him, essentially, for disagreeing with her because he, I can't remember how he describes himself, he's like a BIPOC pangender student or something. Yeah. And because of that, he doesn't go in for white male composers like the ones that Tar's talking about. And so Tar then, it's fantastic writing and fantastic acting that it doesn't start out as being that big of a deal, but you can just see through Cate Blanchett's performance that it just like it, this descent essentially in her realm of authority is something that she just cannot tolerate. So she keeps on coming back to, she tries to, or she seems like she's moving in a different direction, but then she just keeps on coming back to Max, I think is his name, and giving these little insults to him and constantly just like putting him on the spot and embarrassing him in front of the class. And I think that that is a lot more representative of the kind of person that Tar is. That she's not monstrous in the sense that she's just like consciously and wholly malicious, but she is a narcissist and she cannot handle people thinking differently from her or acting differently from her in the spaces where she thinks that she has total authority. That Tar is very much a megalomaniac in a lot of ways in this realm of music and conducting. And a very subtle creature, that she is always manipulating things to get what she wants. Like, she has this infatuation with a cellist. And so she just subtly is, like, putting a thumb on the scale to bring herself closer to this cellist. So that she can presumably have an inappropriate relationship with her, as she has in the past with other students. So yeah, I think the scene is great because of the way it's filmed, it's great because of the way it's acted, but I think that it is the perfect introduction to the kind of character that Tar is, and the kind of characteristics of hers that the movie is going to be focusing on.
Yeah, I think that was, wow, that was really well said, Elliot. And I think, too, this is what I mean when the movie is difficult to watch, because at no point does Tar ever genuinely do something that is, like, super outside the realm of what you would consider appropriate. Like, I don't think there's any moment in the movie where it's really obvious that, like, you know, Tar goes out and, like, punches a baby or something, right? There's no.
Well, she does punch someone.
Yeah, she does attack, but that's, you know, at the end, she's kind of unhinged there. And even that, right? Like, we can kind of understand that Elliot, funnily enough, Lydia and Elliot, lots of our family names showing up in this film. But we've seen that Elliot is kind of a, you know, he is trying to kind of steal some of her glory. And so I'm just saying that the movie is never really over the top of making you buy into the idea that Tar is as bad as the characters around her by the end of the movie are calling her. And so the movie requires you to be paying a huge amount of attention to incredibly innocuous scenes in order to understand all of these qualities of Tar that you've been describing, that I agree. I think she's clearly a narcissist. She's clearly a megalomaniac. The way she deflects when her wife tries to kind of address some things with her is, you know, clearly indicative of someone who is very, very good at escaping blame for things that they for sure deserve blame for. At the beginning of the movie, it's pretty strongly implied, I would say, that Tar sleeps with that girl who's there at the beginning, and like asks if she can text her. But again, I think the only time that the movie makes it really clear that Tar is doing something, you know, very suspect is with the cellist, that she looks to see what type of shoes that she's wearing, so then later when they do blind auditions, she can identify her by those shoes and presumably cheat somewhat and help the girl get a place in the orchestra. But I think it's so, yeah, I agree. It's such an, it's so well written that if you're really paying attention and really combing through the things that Tar does, you can see that she's a sociopath. I mean, she threatens a child and says, like, no one will believe you. That's pretty evil. I guess I forgot about that moment. That's pretty, but even that, right? Like, there's some amount of understandable, like, this child is bullying or hurting Tar's child. And I feel like it's fairly clearly conveyed through the movie that Pietra, oh shoot, is it Pietra? I can't remember how to pronounce.
I think it's Petra.
Petra. Her daughter is probably one of the only people that Tar genuinely cares about. And I think definitely one of the things that I can give unqualified praise for this movie for is the writing in so many of these scenes and Cate Blanchett as Tar, who goes beyond just the words to bring out the ideas so that it does become clear as you spend, you know, 2.5, 2 hours, 40 minutes with Tar that she is, yeah, all of these things that you said. And yeah, the Juilliard scene is a great showcase for that.
Yeah, I think that her threatening the child is A, kind of funny, and B, it does again go to show how much more subtle Tar is as an abuser and a manipulator than she is perceived to be. That she says to the child, like, I will get you. And if you tell any grown-up that I said this, no one will believe you because I'm a grown-up. And so that's, again, indicative of the level of awareness that Tar does have of her authority and the way that she can use it and abuse it. Another example of great scenes with great writing and great character dynamics is the scenes between Tar and Francesca, who is her assistant and also clearly a former and possibly current lover of hers, who she is just constantly, I felt so bad for this woman because Tar is just constantly manipulating her. Mm-hmm. That another, like, just there's so many scenes in this movie that I just love, but another one is Francesca and Tar have kind of been at odds about Krista, who is another of Tar's students who she has manipulated, engaged in an inappropriate relationship with, and then cast off. And Krista has been in contact with Francesca because Tar has basically ruined her life, and it transpires that Krista commits suicide. And Tar instructs Francesca to delete all of her correspondence with Krista. And then later on in the movie, as Tar becomes more and more suspicious of Francesca's allegiances, she asks Francesca, like, did you do what I asked? Did you delete all those emails? And Francesca kind of hedges, and then Tar just waits a minute, just waits for a beat, and then she says, like, oh, by the way, I'm gonna start thinking about who to make my new guest conductor, a position that Francesca clearly desires. And she says, the way she does it is she says, like, compile a list of possibles, of potentials, and then she waits, and then she says, feel free to add your name to that list. And it's just skin-crawlingly masterful the way that she has dangled the things that she can do for Francesca if Francesca cooperates with her by never saying it out loud and just being like, just letting Francesca conclude for herself, this is something that I want to have done. If you do it, then I can help you. If you don't do it, then I can destroy you. So, like, that's just masterful. And the camera throughout this whole thing just sticks to Francesca. So you can see her fear when Tar says, like, get me a list of possible replacements for this conductor. And then the realization when Tara says, add your name to that list, that she's like, oh, this is the price. This is the quid pro quo that she's setting up. So I just have no notes on the writing or the acting and how, insofar as it tells us all of these things about Tar, who she is, how she wields power, and how that's communicated through the actors or the camera or whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, I think the other, I guess I don't feel that bad talking about Tar a lot in a movie called Tar, but I think one other thing that really stuck out to me, partially because it is kind of something that I do in my own life, is I really loved how often Tar was using all of these little jokes to escape, you know, kind of awkward questions. Or like every time she's in front of an audience, she's telling these little jokes. Like at the very beginning of the movie when she's at this New Yorker interview, she's telling these little jokes, and they're clearly like planned jokes because she has a real like Friends style, you know, pause for laughter sort of moment in, after she says each of these. But even when she shows up to the orchestra practice and after she's this great scene that Elliot and I are surely going to talk about where she's banged up her face and she tells a bunch of what feels like to me like prepackaged jokes to escape the awkwardness of having to really dive into, you know, anything that went on. And so I think that's another thing of, you know, she never does that in private. She's never telling jokes. She's not funny in private. She's exclusively funny in public where it can help her public image and help her curry favor with the audience. But as soon as it's one-on-one, it's pure manipulation. Like there's no humor, there's no like, oh, I'm trying to be your friend. It's all just like, hey, I'm way better than you, I'm more powerful than you, I know more about music than you, watch me list, you know, Mahler's eight wives or whatever nonsense that, you know, music nerds talk about, I don't know. But I think that's another great detail where, again, it's not super like obvious, but if you're paying attention, then these sorts of details of the kind of person that Tar is come out.
I just want to apologize if we're getting any background noise from my end. I think everyone's getting home in the building and starting their routines, which of course can't begrudge them for that. They didn't sign up for this podcast. True. But I can't praise Cate Blanchett's performance enough because it is a lot of it, yes, is coming from her performance that in public, like you said, she's very composed. She's very constructed. There's an artifice or an edifice to her in public that's designed to kind of give people what they want and to deflect them from what's really happening. And then in person, in private, she's just a lot more prickly, except with her daughter, who she seems at times to be genuinely loving towards.
Yeah.
Which contributes to the tragedy portion of the Shakespearean tragedy, is that Tar is, as it is, not a very good person, but I don't know, there's just something about her that invites me, at least, towards just a little bit of sympathy. and here, I think we're going to have to start, unless Nathan, you have something else you want to say, we may have to start talking about this movie's more surreal elements.
I would love to start talking about that.
So, this movie is not as straightforward as we've been describing up until now. And in fact, there are a few sequences where Tar seems to be maybe hallucinating, possibly being haunted by a ghost. scenes that are just very strange and borderline horror-esque in the way that they... I remember being in the movie, in the theater, that is, and there's a scene where Tar is just running through a forest and she starts hearing someone screaming. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? Is this movie going to start getting scary? And yeah, it does. There are times where I was like, wow, this is pretty creepy. And to me, these scenes are about the low-level guilt that Tar feels. Because they're almost all to a T related to Krista. Mm. In the one scene where Tar wakes up to hear her daughter, to hear Petra calling for her, you can see Krista sitting in the corner.
What?
As a ghost. What?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Jeez. Yeah. Yes.
Pay closer attention.
Yes. You can see Krista sitting in the corner. Maybe she's a ghost. Maybe she's a hallucination. I don't know. But anyway, Tar keeps on finding these weird symbols that I looked up and apparently are some kind of weaving pattern from an indigenous tribe in the place where Tar is said to have spent a lot of time in, what is it, Peru or the Philippines?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And the sign is related in some way to snakes, which in that culture are like associated with guilt or the cleansing of guilt. And don't worry, I'll get to all this after Nathan's had his say. But for now, I think that these scenes work because A, they're just really interesting. Like I said before, I am becoming increasingly sympathetic towards movies that are just a little bit weird. Movies that have a little bit of the surreal in them. So I think that these scenes are really well integrated in that they don't feel, to me at least, like tonal or genre disjointedness. That they do feel like they are integral elements of Tar's character and how her actions are impacting her psyche. As the movie goes along, she becomes more and more tense and more unhinged to a certain extent because the effects of this, of her own actions, are being realized. In this case, these are the manifestations of her guilt, of her acknowledgement that what she's doing is not right. And so here I'm going to talk a little bit about the scene with the wolf.
All right, go ahead.
Because so Tar takes Olga to where she lives, I guess. And then she wants to give Olga her stuffed animal or something. So she runs in after her and she can't find her. And the place is like a total mess. And so she goes down into this flooded hallway. And at the end of the hallway, a dog, and again, this is very scary. Like in the theater, I was not prepared for this. A dog just appears at the end of the hallway, and she gets freaked out. Everyone gets freaked out because it's a pretty freaky situation. She runs off and trips, and again, hats off to the sound designer because the sound of her hitting the pavement made me go like, oh, ouch, that sounded like it hurt. But anyway, the point of the scene, I think, is that the wolf or the dog or whatever, it's about these things that she's doing. The relationship that she's trying to set up with Olga is bad. It's not good for her. It's destructive and harmful and quite frightening. And so this scene with the wolf or the dog. I think it's a dog. I don't think it's a wolf. It's not big enough to be a wolf. The scene with the canine of indeterminate species is important for that because it's, again, a manifestation of the danger of what she's doing, that she's doing something harmful to herself, psychologically, and then at the end of the scene, physically, because this is, it's causing her to be put in these self-destructive situations. And this will lead into my one real negative for this movie, but I've been talking for a while now, so I'm going to let Nathan let fly with his rebuttal.
Let the Mythbusters come in?
Yeah.
I think that is just as legitimate an explanation as any other explanation would be for a scene that I struggle to understand. And I think if a movie gives you enough thematic material that you can, I don't want to say make up, but it is kind of, you know, I do think watching
extrapolate.
Extrapolate meaning from scenes that are kind of oblique. I think the movie deserves points for that. I think for me, the movie did not give me enough that I would not say I get a sense of pervading guilt from these surreal scenes. It seems to me like I'm also not a huge, I don't love movies where things happen that only serve as metaphors for a thing. I much prefer for actual events to be happening, and those events can be a metaphor for something, but like something has to still be actually happening. If you're just going to show me a metaphor, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of movies that are just, that only operate as a pure, like, this is a stand-in for this thing. I just don't find those to be particularly compelling. So even if your interpretation of this scene with the dog is true, I still wouldn't love the scene because I don't love scenes where it's just like a bunch of nonsense that's a metaphor for something. Because I just think, you know, I just really love it when movies have the metaphor be the thing that that's happening. This is kind of spoilers for The Prestige, but...
Whoa.
So skip ahead like 20 seconds if you don't want The Prestige spoiled for you. But one of the things I love about The Prestige is it turns the metaphorical statement that, you know, ruthless pursuit of an art above everything else is a self-destructive game into a literal statement that the character is literally killing himself in order to continue pursuing his art. Like, it's not a metaphor, it's real. And because it's real, the metaphor is more clear. And so I think this movie is hard because I think if Tar is experiencing guilt over the things she's done, the only ways the movie looks at that is through these surreal scenes that, yeah, are just kind of confusing to me and are just, like, metaphors. And I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting that the director chose that route to display these sorts of things. And I don't think, I would agree with you that that the surreal scenes don't feel like they're out of step with the movie, especially because they're introduced so early on in the film that the movie doesn't do, like, a third act twist that suddenly, yeah, Krista's ghost is showing up in the background of scenes. Although maybe I'd need to rewatch the movie now and see if she is actually appearing in the background of scenes. I think it is very in keeping with the film. I just don't think it does much to improve my enjoyment of the film, most of which is coming from all of the stuff we've already talked about, that it's just this amazing examination of Tar. And I just feel like these surreal scenes where she's running and hearing people scream or just like hearing stuff in her apartment, it does very little for me to improve my enjoyment of that aspect of the film.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I was actually counting on my fingers, and that summary of The Prestige was almost exactly 20 seconds long.
Oh,
so
let's go.
Great job.
Nice.
Yeah, anyway, it may surprise you, Nathan, to learn that I agree with you. And this is the source of my one real negative for this movie, is that, well, I mean, basically, like you said, I think that metaphorical scenes are probably not the way to go in any case, unless it's like a dream or something. Because it's just better, like you said, when things are actually happening, when these things are being integrated into the actual plot, rather than just having these what are essentially asides to be like, oh yeah, by the way, Tara's feeling this. And another thing that it does for me is that it raises unnecessary questions. That I'm like, okay, how much of this is real? How much of this is Tar actually, what, engaging with? Because this experience, this is the experience in the apartment complex. To me, I was like, holy cow. It became strange for me at a point where I was like, why is Tar not thinking about this more? Like, why does she not ask Olga, hey, man, why do you live in the hotel level from The Last of Us? And the same thing with these spirally patterns that keep on showing up. Is she not worried that someone is maybe breaking into her apartment or something? Does she think that there's a ghost around? And so, yeah, that was distracting to me this time around. That these very surreal, very cerebral scenes don't quite jive with the actual, like, nuts and bolts plot of the movie. Because these kinds of things in an otherwise realistic movie would prompt someone who doesn't realize that they're in a movie to be like, wow, that was weird.
Yeah.
Someone screaming in a forest, I should maybe contact the police. Someone's been leaving creepy drawings in my apartment. I think maybe the security of my home is being violated. My student lives in the hotel level from The Last of Us. Why is that? So I think that there is a way out there, I'm quite certain, of these things being more seamlessly integrated, whereas right now they feel a little bit bolted on. They're kind of like side quests that we do to deepen our exploration and our understanding of Tar, which they do in my view. And so that's why it's not a serious negative for me. It's not leading to me like reducing its grade by a whole letter, but it is something that I noticed this time around and something that did impact my enjoyment of the movie.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. Yeah, it's not a huge amount of the runtime of the movie, so it's not gonna be a giant deduction for this film. I do want to say here, before we get to maybe ratings, just as some final thoughts, I really love the scene at near the end of the movie where Tar goes presumably to her childhood home and rewatches a video of Leonard Bernstein, who was established in this film as her mentor, that she was his protege. And she watches an old like recording of him doing some movie something, and she starts crying like halfway through because she's so moved by the way he describes the craft that she loves. And I think it's such a fantastic scene because I think it really elicits a lot of sympathy for Tar, especially here at the tail end of the movie, showing that, you know, she does genuinely love this thing that she's doing and she does genuinely care so much about it. I did also find it funny that then her brother or some like uncle, I don't know
what it was, her brother,
okay, her brother comes home and he's like clearly unaware of anything that's happened to her and like doesn't even care, which I think is also fascinating, that the movie has this beautiful scene that evokes how much Tar loves her art and how meaningful art is and how you know, much she cares about this thing. And then right after that, her brother is just there like, yeah, I don't care. Like, why are you here? I don't care. Like, he's clearly so disconnected from anything that's happening to her, which I think is kind of interesting and funny. I also do want to second your statement that the sound design is so, so good in this movie, because all of the scenes with the orchestra sound so huge and the rest of the movie sounds so hollow and empty. And I think the cinematography is doing a lot to, you know, bring that idea forward as well. And that the shot, the first shot of Tar conducting is so amazing. It hits like a sledgehammer. It's the shot, the sound, it's so, so good. Anyway, those are my final thoughts.
Yeah, I agree that this all of the scenes of her conducting are fantastic. And there is so much size and weight to everything that's happening that's an example of, again, that's why I find this movie to be gripping. I could talk about a lot of scenes that I really like. Another one that I want to mention real quickly is a scene where Tar, throughout the movie, in her apartment is different from her home, actually. Her apartment, she's been hearing this weird, like, chiming sound, and it's really annoying her. And there's a scene where her neighbor comes down in absolute hysterics and, like, forces her to come back with her into her apartment, the neighbor's apartment, where we learn that the sound is some kind of alarm, I think, for the neighbor's ailing mother, who is clearly in serious medical issues. And I think, again, it's just such a great scene of telling us something about Tar, that she does not care about this. She didn't care about the noise. She doesn't care about the revelation that it's related to someone else's suffering. But because it irritated her, that's all that mattered to her. Mm-hmm. And it comes back in her complete lack of sympathy for people who eventually try to sell the apartment, that she just finds it ironically annoying that they're worried about noise. And she's like, oh, do you have any idea? Or mentally, I mean. She's clearly thinking, oh, do you have any idea how annoying it was for me to listen to this poor woman's failing health? And then she does a really funny song about your apartment's for sale, which is great. The other thing is that just, for me, very few things can make a movie more enjoyable to me than a well-constructed, thoughtful meaning to it. That experiencing meaning for me, getting to see into the mind of another person, the writer in this case, and the director, the actress, and all of these different people, all the talented men and women working on this. For me, that is the stuff that makes movies worth watching and stories worth hearing. So, yeah, just to give you a little context for why I think this movie is so amazing. And I do think it's amazing. And now I'm going to prove it by giving it a rating. This movie's fantastic. I only have the one negative. It is negative, but not enough to ruin the movie by far. This movie's incredible. I'm going to give it an A.
Wow. Yeah, I think I'm a little bit below where you are, because I think the surreal bits maybe annoy me a little bit more than you, but I definitely agree. Like I said at the beginning, this is clearly a singular work that, even when I think it's kind of hard to parse out the meaning, I do have no doubt that there is meaning here in this film, and it's being conveyed so amazingly in so many of the other scenes. I'm going to give it an 8.0 out of 10. I think that's exactly the number I can come up with. So now, Elliot, we do, as always, have recommendations for this film. If you sat through 2 hours and 40 minutes of Tar being a bad person, Elliot, what should you watch next?
you should watch like 3 hours of Leonardo DiCaprio being a bad person in Wolf of Wall Street. For this, I wanted to, well, what I wanted to do actually was the movie that Nathan picked. We picked the same movie. So this is my backup, but I wanted to focus on another rise and fall, another example of a character, in this case, a real person, who is just terrible, in a much more, flagrant, like in your face kind of way than Tar is. Yeah. But I chose this for the Shakespearean rise and fall of a person who flies too close to the sun, who gets drunk on their own power and destroys themselves through it. As I've said before, I think I actually may have recommended this movie before.
I think you have too. I don't know for what, but I do seem to remember you recommending this at least once.
Hmm. Well, anyway, yeah, as I've said before, possibly when I was recommending this movie already, I think that this is the best example of Scorsese's, style of making these kinds of movies about people who are just terrible and get their comeuppance. And, yeah, it's a great character study. Lots of great acting, of course. And, of course, Scorsese, I mean, he's a talented director. Even when he's making trash, he's still got it in the directing department. So yeah, go ahead and give that movie a watch.
Yeah, I agree with that one. That is one of my more preferred Scorsese movies. I do have some issues with it. I think it does just as poor a job as every Scorsese movie at convincing you that the character is not to be idolized and that they're a bad human being. But anyway, that's a good movie. My recommendation, as well as Elliot's first recommendation for, I'm assuming, similar reasons, is the Nicolas Cage flick from last year titled Dream Scenario, about Nicolas Cage as a kind of underachieving, somewhat pathetic college professor who inexplicably starts appearing in people's dreams all over the world, and he becomes a bit of a celebrity from that, and then there's some more fallout from it. I think Tar is already a very interesting look at celebrity and just how much of people's lives. Dude, someone is driving away from my apartment building in the sickest car I have ever seen. I swear it looks like a DeLorean. It's so cool.
Wow, thanks for sharing.
Anyway, Tar is about celebrity, I think, in a lot of ways, and how, you know, terrible celebrities can be. Dream Scenario is interesting because I think it's almost the flip side of how much we, the public, can attack celebrities for things that are not under their control, not something that we've been given any ability to speak into. I think Dream Scenario is a really fascinating look at celebrity, as well as just a really very compelling character study of this very pitiful sort of man that Nicolas Cage is playing in this film. I think the surrealness of the dream scenes are really good. They do. A lot of times when people do dreams in movies, they don't have any basis in any dream I personally have ever had. I feel like a lot of these dreams that people talk about in this film look pretty realistic to dreams that I've had. Not completely realistic. I've never had Nicolas Cage appear in any of them. But the general sense of like, oh, this is kind of weird, but I can't put my finger on what's weird about it. I think it is a very, very good movie, very, very interesting movie. So I think, just like Tar, it's coming at celebrity and the culture around it in a very novel sort of way.
Yeah, I agree, obviously, because this was the movie that I was planning on recommending. That movie is fantastic. One of the more creative and imaginative and interesting movies of the recent cinema. So definitely watch it. That's a strong second from me. And I would also like to propose, and Nathan, maybe you can second this, that life is hard and full of disappointments.
I'm not going to second that, Elliot. I think
that life the motion fails.
I think life is a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun doing my podcast with my brother, as always. Also, as always, thank you so much for listening. Spotify Wrapped just came out, so if we were on that, you know, send us an email. Let us know. We love receiving emails. Check out the blog. I don't know if there's a new review up there, but if you haven't seen the old reviews, then they're new reviews to you. So be sure to check those out. We're going to be back next week with another brand new episode discussing the news of the week and discussing a film. So be sure to tune in for that.